And as soon as I had him, I looked up from that board that they lay you on, and I said to my husband, something's wrong.
Welcome, and this is Far Betterment. Welcome to this week's episode of Far Betterment. In this episode, I'm joined by Maria Fowler. Maria Fowler is the founder of Be a Better You Fitness, in which she inspires, motivates, and helps you with nutrition, fitness, and also overall mental health and well-being. She's also an author, and you can find her book Baby Steps on Amazon. I strongly encourage you to visit her website, beabetteryoufitness.com, and check her out. Definitely read the About Us section. And if you live in the area, give her a call. So without further ado, here's Maria Fowler for Far Betterment. Hi, is this Maria?
This is.
Hi, Maria. This is Andrew from Far Betterment.
Hi, Andrew. Can you hear me okay? This is my landline.
Yeah, actually, I can hear you great.
Oh, perfect. How are you?
Good. I'm glad to finally get a hold of each other and get a chance to speak.
I know. It's been weeks, but you know what? Everything is all in the right timing, so I'm good with that. How is everything? How was your trip?
Great, actually. Yeah. Everything went as smoothly as it could, and the kids had a great time, and the wife and I had a great time, so we're happy to be home, though.
Yeah, it's always good to be home when you're away for a while.
Yeah, definitely. But how was your trip? You just got back from somewhere this weekend, no?
Yeah, it was just a quick trip, so it was great. It was just 3 days, and it wasn't so far, you know, about 2 hours out of the way, but it was a good time. And, you know, the best part about that is that I get to work while I'm away, so I can kind of sneak it in. You know, when everybody's still sleeping at 5:30 in the morning and I'm up, I can kind of sneak my stuff in, you know?
Oh, it's nice to be able to have that kind of freedom.
It really is. For real. Yeah. So I love following you guys, and I love how positive you always are, and your podcasts are great. And how did this all start with you?
Well, first, thank you so much. That means quite a bit to me. It never, ever gets old. Hearing that somebody's getting something.
Yeah.
Just hearing that somebody's getting something out of it. That was kind of like the whole point, you know. To answer your question, I guess it all kind of came about because I went through like a bout of like very severe depression. And I really have my whole life. I've had pretty severe depression. And this was just one of the worst times. And I started a blog. Because I realized that my son was also kind of suffering from a period where he wasn't feeling his best. And, you know, I didn't want him to grow up in a world where he had to hide that. So I decided, you know, in order for that to happen, I need to be incredibly open and blunt and honest about it. So I started this blog and began writing and writing and writing. Just kind of like as a document for my kids and my family and to have, you know, whatever may happen in the future. And through that, I kind of started to realize, you know, a lot of the things that I'm feeling, 50% at least, you know, I could have made more effort as far as like reaching out to my friends and reaching out to people and maybe they reached out and I didn't realize it because I was so consumed by this, you know, this feeling of hopelessness and these feelings of like finality. And so I decided I'm going to start a podcast to be able to have an excuse to get in contact with my friends, especially my close friends. And through that, I started having a lot of people reach out to me saying, you know, I have a story. I want to tell it. I want to be on. And I think that's been like the best part. My favorite part is people have reached out and asked to be on and share their story. And so it's kind of grown from there. And that's kind of where we are now, is just kind of curating people's lives, I guess, and stories and learning and growing from each other, hopefully.
Yeah. You're giving people a voice to share their personal stories, their personal successes and tragedies, and what's happening while you're doing that is you're giving other people that are listening hope, because they're listening to somebody saying, that's exactly how I feel. That's exactly what happened to me. I'm not alone. So it's amazing. I love it so much.
Thank you so much. That really does. I said this, you know, just a couple minutes ago, but it feels so nice to hear that. And I can't tell you how much that means to me.
Well, I'm happy that you're doing it, and I'm sure so many people are.
Well, thank you. I hope so.
You're welcome.
I really hope. I hope people are getting something out of it, and I hope it at least shows people, you know, we're not alone. I mean, we truly aren't. That's such a cliche thing to say, but we really aren't. There are many people out there with lots of commonality and lots of similar situations, and I hope we can all learn from each other, or at least learn, you know, how this person got through this and that person got through that, and maybe acquire some tools for ourselves.
Yeah, well, because the most important thing is for us to share our experiences and all that we have been through, because with us sharing our experiences, we don't know who we're helping by doing that.
Absolutely.
You know, because people don't always tell us, you don't know how tremendously you've helped me, or, you know, I can't believe that I didn't know that I could do this to help myself out of this situation until I heard your story. And I say that all the time. I say it to my clients. I say it to everybody I meet. You have to share your story, whatever story that may be. It's important, and it matters, and you should share it, because you have no idea whose life you can be inspiring or even saving.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think people maybe don't realize that it is important. Their story is just as important and valid as anybody else's.
I agree.
Yeah. And so hopefully through this and through, you know, what you do, people are starting to understand, or at least the people we've had contact with are understanding, like, hey, yeah, this is going to make a difference. This is going to make an impact.
And you're also attracting those people. So, you know, for me, when I first started doing all this, more specifically is really the word, when I really started honing in on what I wanted to do and how I wanted to help people, and I realized that I can use my story and I can use my words, and there are so many different ways that I can use myself to help others. When I started doing that and I started putting it out there, I started meeting the most incredible people. Whereas before, I was around people that were very negative and complaining and kind of toxic, and I had to remove myself from that situation. And now all of a sudden, you know, in the last 3 to 5 years, I'm meeting people like you. I'm meeting people that, you know, really and truly care about others and want to help others. And it's when you start meeting people like that, everything changes. You just see the good in the world. You see that there's good, and, you know, not what you see on the news and all the evil and the violence and who's against what. You know, when you put it out there and you start meeting people like yourself, you see that there's so much more good than there is bad. And that's something for me that I want to continue to, you know, to bring into my life. I want more good, and I want to be able to show people that there's more good. There's more good than bad. Good is always going to win.
Oh, absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree with that. And that's something we've really tried to, like, instill in our children, is there are many more good people in the world than bad.
There are.
And, you know, that actually brings me to, since we're speaking about stories and good people, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself and Be a Better You Fitness, and, you know, what you guys are about, and a little bit of your background.
Okay. So I will start with probably the most significant moment in my life, which was when I had my second son, because that's when my life really changed. I had him in June of 2009, and it was a standard C-section. Everything went great. And as soon as I had him, I looked up from that board that they lay you on, and I said to my husband, something's wrong. And he said to the doctor, is everything okay? The doctor said, everything's great. Everything's beautiful. They sewed me up. And from that point on, I felt something was very wrong, and I could not figure out what it was. And so even when I was leaving the hospital, they said, the doctor said, everything's great, you look great, you know, baby's good. And I said, I don't feel right, something feels wrong. They said, no, it's all good. Okay, this is my second son. My first son, it was a terrible delivery, and I didn't get to see him because I was in ICU after. But this was very different. I was, you know, they said I was fantastic, but I felt wrong. And 3 days later, I ended up in the emergency room because when I went to get my staples out, my blood pressure was extraordinarily high. So they told me I was having a stroke.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was 30 years old, and it was so scary because I had a newborn and a 2.5-year-old, and I went to the hospital, and I was there overnight, and they said that it was a stroke, and finally, after all the tests, they realized that it was not a stroke. They had no idea why my blood pressure was so high, and they released me, and this went on for a very, very long time. This went on for 6 months of me being in and out of the hospital, 6 months of me being in and out of doctor's offices. I went to every single specialist you can imagine, from cardiologists to ENTs to neurologists, you name it, I was there. I had lost about 30 pounds in 30 days. I was extraordinarily sick, and the doctors could not figure out what was wrong with me. And so finally they told me I had postpartum depression, and I did not believe that that's what I had, but I was so sick that we got to the point where my husband said, I think that you need to just go see the psychiatrist because we can't move on like this, because I was not living my life. I was just sick all the time. I was hallucinating. I was shaking. I had, you know, significant stomach problems, headaches, dizziness. And so I finally went to see the psychiatrist, and he listened to me for about 7 minutes and basically told me that I had postpartum depression, and if I took all these medicines that I would feel better. And I said, well, can you listen to the rest of what I have to say, because I'm not necessarily sure that this is what I have. I said, I still wake up. I still want to feel better. I fight every day to take care of my kids. I told him that I did not feel sad. Although I was so sick, I felt more fear and panic because I thought that, you know, I was not going to make it. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought that I was dying. And he said, no, that's all normal. That's how this goes. You have postpartum depression and anxiety. And I said, okay. And I listened to him, and I ended up taking the pills that he gave me. And I was awake for 9 days. 9 days and 9 nights, I was wide awake.
Wow.
And yes. And that, for anyone who knows, you know, insomnia, you know, that's its own beast, okay? And mm-hmm. to be awake for one night and not be able to sleep, two nights, that's one thing, but 9 nights put you in a completely different mental state. I was wide awake. I wasn't even tired. I mean, it would be 2:00 in the morning, and I would be scrubbing my bathroom. And finally, my husband brought me back, and the doctor told me that I was, you know, I was having a psychotic episode, and he wanted to admit me to a hospital. And I said, absolutely not. I put my foot down. I said, this is not what's going to happen. I am not going to be admitted to a hospital. I've never had a prior issue like this before. Something is really wrong. And you know, when you know your body, you know something's going on.
Yes.
I decided in that moment that I needed to really fight for myself, and I really needed to advocate for myself, because I very well could have taken the advice of this doctor, and I could have gone to a hospital. I could have gone to sleep and just stayed in that really, that state of despair and fear. But I didn't believe him when he told me that that's what was going on. Something inside of me, something deep inside, didn't believe him. And what I did was I went home and I started digging into research in my house, at the computer, at the library, and I found a bunch of different things that the doctors never tested me for that could possibly be going on with my body. And so I took them to my GP, and I said, I want to be tested for these 10 things. It's simple blood work. And he told me, no, you have postpartum. I want you to leave my office. And he said, I'm not testing you for that. And I said, listen, I said, if you don't test me for this, I'm going to cause a scene in your weight room, because this is what's happening to me. I know it's one of these. And so he said, I'm going to test you, and then I never want you to come back to this office. You're not my patient any longer. So I said, that's fine. And a week later, I got the phone call that I tested positive for almost everything on that list. I tested positive for celiac disease, Lyme disease, Epstein-Barr disease. I tested positive for malnourishment because I had these diseases, so I wasn't absorbing vitamins, minerals, nutrients, and this is why I was so sick, and this is why between the Lyme and the celiac, I was having my nervous system shut down on me. And so from that moment on, I made this silent promise to myself, like we all do, you know, we all have these silent promises, but I made this silent promise to myself that I would never walk another day on this earth without trying to help somebody that needs help and is not getting it from other people. I would listen to people. I would share my story with people. I would do whatever it is that I could to make people feel like they're not crazy or they're not alone or, you know, whatever they're feeling is okay, whether it's a panic attack or because I was having panic attacks in the mall because I was so sick or, you know, whether they're not feeling well and the doctors aren't listening, whatever it was, I wanted to be a safe zone. I wanted to be someone that even a stranger could look at and see in my face that, okay, everything's going to be okay. And so it took me 18 months, a little bit longer than 18 months to get myself better. And I did that. I did 5 months of antibiotic for the Lyme because that's how bad the Lyme was. And I did a lot of nutrition, fitness, because I had to really heal my body because my body was so sick. So that's where my life changed. That's how it changed so significantly and pushed me into the realm of be better. That's really where that all came from because I don't feel that some of the people in my life at that time were being the best that they could or doing the best that they could, especially some of the doctors. And while I had some amazing doctors, I had some really awful doctors that were definitely not doing the best that they could. And I want people to do the best that they can in whatever that capacity that may be, because everybody's best is completely different, you know? So that's where this all started. I know that was a little long, but where this all began. And that's where the Be Better movement really started, although I didn't know what that was 10 years ago. It's just all coming together in the last 3 to 4 years, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that kind of brings up an interesting question for me. And just going back here, do they have any indication where, I mean, because that's a significant, like, group of diseases and illnesses to have all at once. Do they know where or how or when those came about? Or, and first of all, like, that's an incredible amount of insight that you had about your own body to realize that something wasn't right. And good for you for pushing the issue and, you know, fighting so hard, because I think a lot of people don't realize that they have that power.
Right. And that's true. And I thank you for saying that. You know, I've always had, ever since I was a little girl, ever since I could remember, and I think a lot of people always have some kind of intuition that's a little bit stronger, and they just, you know, we ignore it because sometimes it can be scary, or sometimes we have a thought that comes with that intuition, and we don't like what that thought is because that thought is not necessarily always a good thought, right?
Yeah.
So we push that thought away, and by pushing that thought away, rather than examining it a little further, we're pushing down our intuition. And I've always had a strong intuition, always. And it came in many forms, and I noticed it later in my life even more so. But with this, in the moment that this doctor said to me that I'm having a psychotic episode, something, and I will tell you, I was a disaster. If you would have saw me, you know, if anybody in the street would look at me, they would all look at me with pity. I looked awful. I mean, I was so sick. But the moment he said to me, you're having a psychotic episode, something inside of me, like, I just want to say it exploded. And I looked at this doctor and I was like, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I cursed. You know, I'm not going to curse with you, but I cursed.
Oh, you're fine. You can curse all you want.
Oh, because I was like, absolutely fucking not. There's no way. There's no way that I'm having a psychotic episode.
Yeah.
And I just knew. And I really like to tell people this story about the intuition and about listening to those thoughts that they may push aside, because those thoughts, along with their intuition, they go together. And listening to that and examining that further will help them really in a lot of areas of their life. But going back to what you asked, there was no inclination of any of those things. So being a kid, I always had stomach issues. I always had headaches, but they were never linked to anything because celiac disease, first of all, was not prominent like it is now. It was not as, you know, in your face as it is now. So the doctors never really looked for that. Although I think that, you know, that's what I really had all of that, you know, growing up with all of those ailments, that makes sense. Now, the Lyme disease, honestly, I live on Long Island, so I could have gotten bit by a tick at any time. Who knows? And the Epstein-Barr, that everybody has Epstein-Barr virus, EBV. Everybody has it dormant in their body, right? It's part of the monovirus. It's part of, you know, a bunch of other autoimmune viruses. The interesting thing about EBV is that it's always dormant, except if it's, like, hereditary. And this is what I've read. This isn't even what a doctor has told me. So my mom has EBV really bad, and it used to flare up. And I'm assuming with the EBV that because of the celiac and the Lyme and the malnourishment together, I was having a huge flare. And so I did B12 shots for that, you know, prescription B12 shots that, you know, one of the great doctors that I was dealing with helped me out with. And that helped. But they had no inclination. I was very healthy. I looked very healthy. I felt very healthy for the most part. There was no inclination that anything was wrong. Once I had that C-section and it caused a trauma to my body, then the celiac, that's when it was activated, and that's what, you know, the doctors that I dealt with after, that's what they had told me. And after all of my research over the last 10 years, that's what I found also. That's actually happened to a lot of different people. So that's not uncommon for celiac to be activated later in life by a trauma to a body.
I did not know that. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't know a lot of things still, you know, about that disease and autoimmune diseases, and there's so much to be learned. There's so many different things that we can learn. But when I found that out, of course, celiac disease is hereditary, so I started talking to everybody in my family, like, this is what you have, this is what you have, this is why you've been so sick, you know? And my mom actually found out later in life that she also has celiac disease, so it's just one of those things. It's hereditary. You can't catch it from somebody else. And it can be activated later in life, even though it was lying dormant in my body, you know, when I was a kid. Maybe it was showing up through my stomach problems. Maybe it was showing up through my headaches. But after I had my second son is when it came out full force, full blown.
Do you remember how you felt the moment, like, that, you know, they finally... Well, first of all, that the doctor listened to you and did the blood work. But when they came back with all these answers for you.
I fell to my knees on the phone and I said, thank you, God. Thank you. I was so relieved because at that point, I thought that it was the end of me. Whether, you know, I was losing my mind, whether I was so sick and they couldn't find it and I you know, I was going to die. These are the thoughts that run through your head when you're facing a situation where you're so sick. And so when they called me, the receptionist called me and said, this is what you tested positive for, the relief that flooded my body was like nothing else I've ever experienced. It was relief. It was joy. It was sadness. It was so many different things, but relief being the number one. Because then I said to myself, okay, you know what's going on. Now you can go fix it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's
because once you know what's going on, once you have an answer that's there, looking at you, you know, you're looking at your blood work is stating something specific. It's right in front of your face. There's no disputing it. And I had more blood work done later to confirm again. You know, you just feel relief. And some people don't feel that way, which, you know, later as I, you know, continued on this journey and I speak to a lot of different people who have celiac, there's not very many people that you find that were relieved. And for me, that boggled my mind because of like there's so many worse things that you could have where you would need medicine or chemo or, you know, dialysis and this. All you have to do is change your food.
Yeah.
So I was relieved. I was so relieved, and I was so, so grateful that I was going to be able to fix what was going on with me and my body and my mind, because my mind was in a bad place at that point, too.
You know, just to, like, get the... Since we have the platform and, you know, we're speaking to people, maybe we should talk a little bit about, like, the symptoms and stuff, things that you noticed that gave you, like, the indication that something was wrong. Maybe because, like you said, a lot of people live with this and don't even know it. So maybe we can give people a little bit of info on how to recognize, or maybe when to ask questions, or, you know, when to be concerned.
Yeah, of course. So, okay. My celiac disease and my Lyme disease, sometimes it can be very, very hard to tell what is what because the symptoms are so similar. Celiac has over 200 symptoms. It can come as stomach pain. It can come as joint pain. It can come as headaches, dizziness. There's a skin rash that goes along with celiac, a very specific skin rash. It's called DH. That you can lose your hair because now you're malnourished, you can become anemic. You can have reproductive issues. Celiac is a really, really detrimental disease if it's not treated. It destroys your body from the inside out, right? For me, my celiac and my Lyme both attacked my nervous system. And it attacked me, like in my ears. I would have serious tinnitus. I would go deaf in one ear. I would shake. I would have really bad tremors, and I would shake a lot. I would have different parts of my body go numb. You know, it would be my toes one day. It would be my elbow, my knee, just random numbness, serious, serious headaches, dizziness. And I actually did hallucinate a couple of times because my nervous system was so messed up. So celiac disease presents as a lot of different things. And if you're a child and you have celiac and it's active, you may notice, you know, the child is not growing, the child is not gaining weight, or the child has, you know, a distended stomach, is always bloated. There's a lot of different symptoms associated with celiac disease. And so for me, like I said, it hit me in a lot of different ways. I did have stomach issues, headaches, all that, but it hit my nervous system the hardest. And that also induced serious anxiety and panic attacks.
I didn't even realize that it affected, I mean, this is educating me, but that it affected mood, and depression was also a symptom and things like that.
Yes. Yeah. Depression is a big symptom. The whole mental, emotional, you know, anything that goes along with that, celiac can seriously, seriously affect that. And like I said, I had my anxiety and panic attacks, which mm-hmm. That's not something that I had experienced before. I remember walking through the mall with my husband and my kids, and we were there maybe 15 minutes, and my senses were so amplified from being anxious. So some people, I'm not going to speak for all people because I don't know, but I know some people that I've spoken to as well as myself, when we get anxious, our senses are amplified. So, you know, the sense of touch, if somebody's touching you, it's uncomfortable. If there's a lot of noise around you, your ears are so sensitive to that noise because you're so anxious. Everything is on like high alert. So I was in the mall and there were people everywhere and I started sweating and everything felt like it was closing in on me and it was so loud and there was noises and people talking. And I looked at my husband and I said, you need to get me the hell out of here right now because I am going to die on this floor. You know,
yeah.
And people that have experienced anxiety and panic, they will understand that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Myself, I've been having panic attacks here and there since I was 12, I think is when I had my first one. So I totally get that feeling of like dying, and you really do feel like you're going to die in that moment.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, without explanation, even though you're trying to rationalize in your head, like, well, you know, I can't be dying. It doesn't matter. Like, you feel like you are, you feel like you're going to, it's imperative, and whatever you're in, what situation you're in, you know, where you're at, you have to get out of it immediately, no matter what.
Yes.
Yeah. So I totally understand that. And I think,
yeah,
I think a lot of people will.
I think so too. And I was, you know, lucky enough as I moved forward and tried to, you know, trying to heal myself and healing myself, because that's what I did. The anxiety and the panic took, it didn't take longer. It was harder.
Mm-hmm.
The anxiety and the panic was harder to heal than the celiac, because it's easy to change your food, even though people may tell you that it's, you know, it's so hard and they miss bread or whatever they say. It's easy to change your food. It's easy to do that compared to trying to get yourself out of a panic attack.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Food's a tangible, like, physical change. And
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll pick changing my food any day than over having a panic attack.
Yeah.
And that was hard for me because I had such a bad experience with the medication that I did not want to turn to medication again to help me. And I think maybe it would have been more beneficial had I tried that, but I had such a bad experience that I ended up doing it without medication, and that was very challenging. And that took a lot of work and a lot of effort and a lot of learning, you know.
Did you learn techniques for yourself?
I
always like to ask that, or, you know, because I've got my own techniques that I use. But what do you do?
All right, well, You know, this is different for everyone, mm-hmm. but there was a book that I had read. I'd read a lot of books. Okay. I love to read. I read a lot of books. I talked to a lot of people. I listened to a lot of podcasts. And this one particular book that I read, it was Dr. Claire Weeks, and it's called Hope and Help for Your Nerves. And I believe it was written in the 70s. And that book helped me, because that book talks about not fighting the panic that's coming. And she calls it flowing with it, or floating with it, right? So you allow yourself to feel the panic when the panic hits you. And rather than fighting it and saying, I'm fine, everything's okay, it's going to be okay, this isn't real, she tells you, let it hit you and feel it and focus on how it feels in your body and just flow with it, like let it come and then let it go. And that's not easy at all by any means.
Mm-hmm.
But after practicing that for, you know, a long time, you eventually start to, they become shorter. The panic attacks become shorter. The anxiety becomes less. But then there was another, so that's one technique that I practice. I practice, you know, flowing with it and with the anxiety. There's another article that I read, and I can't remember his name, but it was a psychiatrist who had a client who would always come in, and she would always feel like she was having a heart attack. And no matter how many cardiologists she went to, no matter how good the tests were and they said her heart was strong, she always, always, always swore she was having a heart attack because of her anxiety. And the doctor, at one point, after realizing, you know, that she was healthy and her cardiologist gave her a clean bill of health, he told her while she was having the panic attack in his office that he wanted her to do jumping jacks. And I will never forget this, because sometimes I will randomly start doing jumping jacks and people are like, what are you doing? Getting rid of my anxiety. So he told her to do jumping jacks, and she was like, I'm absolutely not doing jumping jacks. And so he said, you have to do the jumping jacks, because if you do jumping jacks and you're having a heart attack, you're going to fall on the floor and you're going to die on my floor. And so she was mortified and petrified, and he said, listen to me, trust me, do the jumping jacks. So she did. She started doing jumping jacks, and by the time she got to like 120, she no longer felt panic, and her breathing was regulated from doing the jumping jacks, and she didn't die. And so the moral of that article, I guess, is when you're feeling like you're in this situation, if you've already been through all of the doctors that have given you a clean bill of health and you're feeling panic and anxiety and you start doing jumping jacks and you still don't drop dead,
yeah.
You know, that will actually calm your nervous system because it forces you to regulate your breathing because now you're using your cardio, right? So I started doing that. I would do that in bathrooms. Like, it was ridiculous. But in my head, it wasn't ridiculous because it was helping me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I also, you know, I journal. I do my gratitude journal, the things that I'm grateful for. And, you know, just I do some meditation, but it's not real meditation. It's fake meditation because real meditation, my brain is too active and I overfunction too much. So I can't get myself real quiet, but I have a really great 5-minute, you know, frequency vibration raising meditation that I do, which really centers me. And those are the things that I do, but it took time. It took years, you know, 2, 3 years, 4 years to really master all of that. And it's not easy.
No, it isn't at all. And I'm like you. I had, you know, my situations with medication and things like that, and I didn't enjoy it. So yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I needed to find a way on my own. At least for the anxiety and the depression, that kind of stuff. And I'm not saying, you know, medication doesn't work for people. I think it absolutely does. Just not for myself. Yeah. Do you recognize, like, during the day or the beginning of the day, that today might be a day where you're going to have an anxiety attack, or is it kind of like, does it just hit you?
Actually, no. I don't recognize it because I have not had an anxiety attack in a very long time. if I were to have one, they would last. I haven't had an anxiety attack in years. I'm going to be honest.
Oh,
I mean,
wow, okay.
Years.
Good for you.
So at least 5 years, right? But I do get anxious. Mm-hmm. And when I get anxious, my anxiety presents itself as brain fog.
Okay.
There's
okay.
Another word for that. Well, I don't know why I can't think of the word. I know the word and I can't think of it right now. But my anxiety does present as brain fog. I can't focus. You're talking to me and I have no idea what you're saying. But that's how my anxiety presents now. And I know it's anxiety. You know, I know what it is.
Absolutely.
I recognize it. When I used to have attacks, they would literally hit me out of nowhere. So, like I said, I would be walking through the mall and boom, you know. And before I had any inclination of what to do or how to help myself or ask for help, because asking for help is, you know, when you're in the middle of an anxiety attack, you don't want to ask for help because you don't want people to judge you or, you know, whatever that may be. So it would just hit me and it would last and it would last and it would last and it was never ending. It wasn't 15 minutes. It wasn't a half hour. It was hours, you know, of panic, sheer panic. And it was awful. And it was terrible, and it was scary, and I never knew when it was going to hit. There was no prerequisite to it. Yeah. It would just come. I would be having the best day, the best day. I could have the best day. Everything would have been great. The bills would have been paid. The kids would have been healthy. The husband would have been happy. I would have been great. And out of nowhere, 3:00 in the afternoon, boom, for no reason. So,
how did your kids and, I mean, it must have been scary for them as well. How did your kids and your husband? Did they see it and scare them?
That, I will tell you, that was the worst. Yeah. That, God bless my husband because he is such a strong and patient soul. And whatever I needed, I just had to ask. But again, it's very difficult to ask, mm-hmm. you know, for what you need when you don't even know what you need. He was very supportive through the whole thing. He's still supportive. He's my number one fan. He will support me no matter what it is. If I'm sick, if I'm healthy, if I want to, you know, start a business, if I want to help people, he's amazing. But he couldn't help me because he had no idea what was going on, right? So that, in my opinion and my thought, is that that must have been really hard for him. And I was so consumed with my sickness that I wasn't even paying attention to him. I didn't even know he was there half the time because I was so consumed with how sick I felt and how anxious I was. I was, however, overly focused on my kids because I didn't want them to suffer because of what I was going through. And my, you know, my newborn at the time, he's 10 now, he was a newborn, so he didn't know anything. My 2.5-year-old, he was so smart back then. He's smart now, but he was so smart back then. He knew something was wrong with my mom. Something is wrong with mommy. He knew, and he can talk to you about it to this day. And I don't want to feel guilty for him knowing that I was sick and I was not well and, you know, I was having that difficult time. But at the same time, you know, you can't help but as a mom or a parent feel that little tug of guilt. They're both great now, you know, and I don't think it really affected them in a terrible way. But on the other side, I would never change any of this because it's made me such a better person and it's made me so completely different than I was 10 years ago. And the way that I now speak to my children and raise them and see them the way I see my children, you know what I mean? Like, and yeah. Talk to them. I don't believe that I would be this way if this had not happened. So it was terrible while it was happening. And I, you know, I thank God every day that my husband stuck by my side through it because that must have been really difficult. And my baby is my baby. He doesn't know any different. And my 2.5-year-old, he will remember. But I think in the end, you know, he'll be better for it too.
Yeah, if that absolutely. Makes, no, yeah. It does. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to gain experience, you have to have experience. So I think that, at least for my kids, you know, I can speak for myself. I think them witnessing things just like your kids have will at least hopefully help them have the tools to be able to deal with things like that or other difficult things on their own when the time comes. Because obviously the time will come when they have to deal with something difficult.
Well, yeah. And, you know, on that note, I mean, when I started Be a Better You Fitness, it's more than fitness. It's not just fitness. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's fitness, it's nutrition, it's mindset. It's using these tools to help people be better, to help them feel better, you know, and to help them get through this life, right? And then I talk to my kids all the time about so many different things. I ask them a ton of questions. I'm constantly talking to them. And once they were old enough to really start letting me in more and talking back to me more, I started to realize that other parents, you know, some other parents are not really talking to their kids as much. And then there's other kids that are going through tough times and they feel uncomfortable and they don't want to talk to their parents or their teachers. And then I got this, you know, idea that I wanted to do something with kids. And so I started Be Better Kids. So I have Be a Better You Fitness and Be Better Kids because kids, they need to be loved and supported and listened to and heard and talked to. And just, you're right. You know, like with the kids are always going to be going through challenging situations with us, without us, in school. Yeah. And they need all the help and all the support and love that we can give them because it is tough out there. But they also need to feel the losses and the negativity and the bad things that are, we can't shelter them from it because then how are we preparing them for real life? You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think people really underestimate kids and how much they notice and how much they feel and how much they absorb. So actually, yeah, let's talk a little bit about Be Better Kids. Sorry, go ahead.
I said, okay.
Yeah, let's do that. I think that's a really great idea and a great thing. Like, I think that more people should have come up with this. But I'm glad you did. So let's talk a little bit about it. Tell me, what kind of tools do you provide the kids with? How do you help them deal with things? How, like the parents and stuff, obviously, how do you help them deal with the kids?
Well, you know, it depends on their ages.
Okay.
You know, that's really important because every kid at every age, there's just something different going on. So, you know, I have a girls group that I do, which is 8, 9, and 10-year-old girls, and they're amazing. They're incredible. They're strong, and they are really getting to know themselves. And we do fitness exercises, but what I do is I have them, when we're doing fitness exercises, I talk to them. So let's say we're warming up, and we're warming up by throwing a volleyball at each other, right? And we're doing it amongst the group. Instead of just throwing the ball, I'll have them say something that they love about themselves. So, you know, I'll throw it to one of the little girls, and she'll be like, I love that I'm artistic. And that's amazing because she's getting to say what she loves about herself out loud in a group of other girls that are doing the same thing, so it's not uncomfortable. So that's one thing. I'm basically like building them up and they don't even know it. And then what I'll do is, you know, on the cool down, whatever it is that we're doing, I'll have them say something nice about another girl in the group. And that's another incredible thing because it's such a small, it's a small statement, but it speaks volumes and it really encourages them and it builds their confidence. And that's something really important. So no matter what age group I'm dealing with, I'm always doing confidence building on the sly, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so that they don't feel uncomfortable about it. So fitness is huge. Nutrition is huge. Health, overall health, which includes fitness, nutrition, and mindset, is huge. Mindset is a big one for me. Mindset is probably the most important because if you're not in the right mindset, or if you don't have the right mindset, or if you can't find some kind of positivity and some kind of way to make things work, then I think you're really in trouble. And I think that that requires extra help, you know, maybe from a different kind of professional. But if I can work on their mindset and I can build them up and I can teach them that they can change their thoughts to change their life, that right there is something. It's huge. You know, it's huge for them. It really is. Because teaching them to think differently, teaching them to think better, helps them improve their overall life. And, you know, with adults too. It's the same thing with adults too.
Have you had a situation where you felt, I don't want to say helpless, but, you know, a difficult situation? And, you know, how did you overcome that to help that person?
Yes, there's, you know what, yes, a bunch of times for children, for adults. If I have a network of professionals that I deal with, right, that they have other skills and they have other experiences and more knowledge than I do in certain areas, and if I feel that I have a client that I can't help, I refer them out because it's not fair for me to me knowing that they need something more than what I can give or what I can offer. It's not fair for me to keep them as a client. That's first. I have had clients that their, you know, their self-worth, it's non-existent, and that overtakes everything. So they're never going to lose weight, let's say, for example, because they don't believe that they can, because they don't believe that they're worthy to. And no matter how much I would work with them or, you know, try, it's out of my hands because they're too far gone. And so I would refer them to another professional that can work with them, that can help them better than I can. I can only do so much, you know?
Yeah.
And my number one priority and my number one goal is always, always, always the patient first, the patient's health, not, you know, their safety, their goals, their mental health, their physical health. I would like to help them in any way I can. And if I can't, then I can't. And then I recognize that and I accept it and I send them to somebody who I trust who can help them.
How do you manage to personally like stay so strong and
I have no idea
deal with this stuff? I mean, it's a lot to, you know, you already have your own stuff going on and you know, it sounds like you're taking on quite a bit from everybody else. And I just wonder, you know, like what keeps you from, I don't know, like falling apart.
Okay. I do fall apart. I think everybody falls apart. I just do it.
That's fair. I like that you said that. That's very fair.
Yes, I do. I think everybody does. Like, you know, I do fall apart. I usually do it on my bathroom floor.
It's a good place.
You know, on my bathroom floor, that's where I usually do it when no one's home and it's quiet. I love my clients so much, from the new ones to the, you know, the longstanding ones, that I do whatever it is that I have to do for them to be strong for them, you know, to, I don't hide from them that I have my moments, because if I do that, then they will not respect me and they will not look at me like I'm a real person.
Yeah.
Because I am a real person. And so my clients know, just yesterday, I have a client who's back from vacation and he needs to speak with me. And so yesterday we texted back and forth a little bit in the morning and I didn't answer him for maybe 7 hours because I was just all over the place. I was really busy. I was having a tough day yesterday. And so he texted me at night and he said, "Is everything okay? Because I haven't heard from you and I feel like you're dropping me as a client." And so I called him and I'm like, "Listen, I love you. I'm here for you. I am sorry I didn't get back to you. I am having a tough day. Like, I am really having a rough day. I don't have everything together today. You got to give me, you know, the rest of the night and I'll be with you tomorrow." And I think that when they see that I'm a real person and I have real feelings and I have tough days too, that it resonates with them, because I'm not some, you know, person on YouTube that you only see smiling, and I'm always smiling, don't get me wrong, I really am, but I'm a person, a real person that they can see that has a real life with real feelings and that can have a tough day. And so I don't hold it together all the time. I think that I really hold it together 95% of the time.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I think that I do. I think that I do because I went through 6 months where I didn't have it together at all. That's what I think. And so I push myself every day to get through what I need to get through. I use the tools that I have to focus. I love distraction. I don't know if you utilize distraction at all, but I'm going to be honest. If I am feeling like I'm, you know, if I'm not focused or if I can't figure something out or whatever, if I'm having a tough moment, I distract myself by maybe reading 2 chapters of a book or listening to my favorite song or, you know, getting 15 minutes in on the treadmill. I will distract myself so that that doesn't consume me. So that really helps me. That helps me for, you know, a lot, actually, you know, from having a whole entire day of a shit show.
Yeah. I think.
Yeah, but I couldn't help it. Yesterday was just a shit show. It was just, it's just what it was.
I think you have to have those days, though. I mean, more like you said.
I mean, everybody does. We're only human.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is probably my distraction. Speaking with other people and connecting with them and like relating to them. I think this is probably my thing. I think I'm kind of terrible at that. I'm kind of terrible at distracting myself. I think I am the kind of person that really needs to like problem solve. And if I don't, then it just consumes me and I have to try to make it work, or I have to try to fix it, or I have to try to, I don't know, like resolve things before I can move on. I've always kind of been like that.
I can understand that, though. I can. So distraction doesn't work for everybody.
Yeah, I would, you know, and like I said, though, this is probably the one thing that does really make me feel human again. It really makes me feel like connected to people. And That whole, you know, everybody says that technology has, you know, made things to where everybody's further apart and we're not communicating with each other and we're not connecting anymore. I don't believe it because of this platform here. I don't believe it because, like, I've connected with people across the country, you know, thousands of miles away from me, or people, I mean, as far as like Europe, and been able to relate to them on like a very human level, and I've never even seen them, you know, so it's hard for me to buy into that. But here's a generic question.
Okay.
It's going to be pretty generic. I'm sure you've gotten this one plenty of times, but have you always felt like you wanted to help people, or was it this very specific situation that like kind of sparked that in you?
No, it's been always.
I was going to say, seem like that kind of person that you've always...
It's been always, yeah. Yes. Thank you. It's, you know, when I was a kid, but it presented itself much differently.
Okay.
So when I was a kid, I wanted to help people by two ways. I wanted to write books so that people could get lost in my stories and, you know, enjoy something out of their normal, regular life, because I love to read. I love to read so much, and I read so much as a kid, and I always used to write my own stories, and that was one way I wanted to help people. And the other way was I wanted to be a lawyer, and I wanted to help people that way. But as I grew, you know, out of my child stage and into my teenage years, and I went to college, that all changed. It all turned. So I ended up majoring in psychology, and I wanted to help people that way. I wanted to be the person that they came to talk to about what was going on, and I wanted to be the person that would listen to them and empathize with them and have compassion and, you know, let them know everything's going to be okay. And so I did that out of college. I worked for 5 years as a counselor for kids ages 10 to 21 that were at risk, which means, like, you know, they grew up in impoverished areas, or they were in gangs, or, you know, just troubled kids. And that was such an amazing, amazing experience. And then I went on to have my own kids, and hence back to the beginning of our story, how, you know, the universe pulled me in a different direction. You know, and that's, I genuinely believe that the universe had this pull on me into a whole entire, you know, different direction to help people.
I believe that too. I really buy into that because, I, especially like the success you've had, and it sounds like you've accomplished like a lot of your goals. Speaking of books, we should definitely talk about that. But it sounds like, you know, you've really got a handle on what you wanted to do and how to make it work. And I really love that you say you love your clients, because it sounds like you've built more of like a family than just like a business. It sounds like it really extends to them as well.
Thank you. And it does. And I tell them all the time, I do love them. I love each one of them for so many different individual and unique reasons. And I tell them all the time, when you're my client, I don't care if you decide you're going somewhere else to another trainer, another nutrition consultant. When you're my client for life. I tell them that all the time. I say, you call me whenever you need me. You have a question, you call me. Like, I will always be here for you. I don't care if you leave, you know, the state. I don't care if you have a new trainer. None of that matters to me, because if you need me and you call me, I'm here. You're my client. You're my client for life, because I care about you. I learn to care about each one of them and they're all so amazing. They're such incredible people. You know, you build friendships there too. So, yeah, thank you for saying that, because I really and truly feel that way. I do love them.
No, I really admire that. Like, I think that's such a great quality to have, to be like compassionate. Like, we don't have enough compassion, and like, I love that quality in people. Just compassion goes so far in like changing people's perceptions of everything and changing who they are and growing. And you know, I'm a big fan of growth.
Yes, you and me both. I'm with you.
So yeah, let's talk about your book. You said you always wanted to write a book, and you did.
Baby
Steps to a Better You. Like, what was that like? What was that whole process like?
Oh, I've always loved writing. I have wanted to write so many different books through the years, and I just never did. There's no excuse, right? Mm-hmm. I just didn't do it. I would start and then stop. And then one day I realized that most of my clients were asking me the same question or saying the same thing. It's that they don't have time. They don't have time to be healthy. They don't have time to worry about their food, or they don't have time to exercise. And finally, I got tired of telling them the same things all the time. And I said, you guys do have time, and I'm gonna write you a book really quick. And so I wrote this book in a weekend. And, writing it was the easy part. Editing it was the hard part. But it's called Baby Steps, and it's a realistic guide to being a better you. And it's my tips for people that, like me, busy moms or parents or, entrepreneurs or kids that have, a lot of different sports and they're in band and they feel like they have no time. It's for the regular person that feels that they have no time to work on themselves. And it gives, my tips and my strategies and my baby steps for them to start working on themselves and where they can fit, these pockets of time in their regular lives without taking away from what they're doing.
No, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's really it. That's what it's about.
I was just going to ask, how do you fit in? I mean, it sounds like you're constantly busy. How do you fit all this in?
I will tell you, honestly, sometimes I have no idea what the hell I'm doing. I just do it. If there's something I want to do, right, I always tell my husband, and he knows, if I want something and I'm decided on it, I want it done yesterday. I don't want it done in 2 weeks from now. Mm-hmm. And that's a downfall because I need to have things done immediately. And not everybody is like that. And I'm really busy, but I thrive when I'm under pressure, and I thrive when I'm busy. When I'm sitting still, and this may be because of the previous anxiety, or this may be just because it's in my DNA, because my dad is kind of like this, but when I'm sitting still for too long, I get very, very uncomfortable, and I feel that I can be doing so many things right now. I could be writing, I could be reading, I could be making myself better, I could be making someone else better, I could be, doing the dishes. I could be doing so many things with my life and with my time. There's so many miraculous things to see, and there's so much to do. Why am I sitting? So that's why I'm so busy all the time. I want to see everything. I want to experience everything. I want to do everything. And I know that's not realistic, but that's how I am. I don't like to sit still for too long. It makes me very, very uncomfortable.
I can completely respect that. I really like that.
It's just the truth.
Yeah, I like that. So speaking of experience, what's an experience you've had that you always wanted to do and then you finally accomplished it?
I always wanted to write a book. That's definitely, in my top 10
there. Pretty high up there.
Yeah, that's really high up there. And I have, three other books that I'm writing that, of course, I want to get to them immediately, but you just can't. You don't have time. But I can't wait for those because that's going to be up there too. I actually had a vision a couple of years back about creating my own wellness retreat called the Be Better Wellness Retreat. And that is actually coming to life this October. And that experience, that creation, that goal that is coming to life, that's pretty cool too. That is something that at one point I didn't think that I would be able to pull off or to accomplish. And the fact that it's coming together so incredibly with all these fantastic professionals that are joining me and the people that are reaching out. That's something that I've wanted to do for a while, and that's coming together, so that's pretty awesome. And then, of course, having my kids and being a mom, I mean, that's mind-blowing. That's something else. That's, making people and raising them and keeping them safe and keeping them loved and You know, that too. That's something that's out of this world to me.
What do you think makes you, like, a great mother?
God, I don't know that I'm a great mother. I don't know. I feel like maybe every mom says that they don't know that they're a great mom, though, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I have to remind my wife all the time.
I think, yeah, you know, I don't know what makes a mom a great mom or a dad a great dad, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what I do know is if you are a parent and you love your kids so much that you would put them above and beyond and before anything else to keep them safe and to make them feel loved and supported, and then I think if you feel that, then I think that you're doing the best you can as a parent, and I think that makes you a great parent. So I don't know anything else. I mean, you know, this is my first go around as a mom with my both my boys. I don't know. I don't know what makes somebody a great parent. I just know that if you love them so much and support them and keep them safe and, you know, you would do anything to make sure that they're safe and comfortable, then I think that makes you a great parent. Because, I mean, God, it's hard. You know, it's challenging.
I think that answer makes you a great parent. That was a great answer.
I don't know.
No, really. My wife and I talk about this all the time. Like, you know, we've got friends who've had kids and or just are thinking of having kids or want to have kids. And they've always asked us, like, what do you guys do, like, to parent your kids, or how do you handle discipline, or like, oh my God, I'm gonna have a kid, what do I do, how do I know, how do I not mess them up? And I've, like, we've always told them, as long as you love your kids more than you love yourself, you'll be fine. And that's, like, always been our really simple answer. Just love them more than you love you. Like, put them first, basically, is, you know, what we've said.
And, I agree. And I agree completely. I think everybody parents differently, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we've learned parenting from our parents. And we've all been raised differently. You know, and then there's all these books that tell us how to be parents, and there's these TV shows that tell us how to be parents, and news and podcasts, and there's no right or wrong way to be a parent, you know?
Absolutely.
You have to just do it, and you have to do it with everything that's in you, and you have to love them, and you have to talk to them. You can't not talk to your kids. I'm a firm believer that you have to talk to your kids. Let them know that it's okay for them to talk to you by you talking to them. Ask them questions. Listen to them. That is so important, you know? But just love your kids. It's not easy. It's challenging. There's no perfect parent.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, 100%. What... I guess, you know, before we get off here, what advice would you give to people wanting to be better or seeking help or who maybe haven't sought help yet, or and not just like physically, you know, because I know you deal a lot with the mental aspect as well. But what would be your biggest piece of advice to them?
That's challenging. There's so much. My biggest piece of advice that for people that want to really better themselves is to know that you matter. That not only do you matter to other people, but you matter to the universe. You matter in life. You're here on this earth for a reason. I believe that. I believe that there's a divine reason that each of us are here on this earth. And you matter. You matter so much, and you're loved so much, you know, whether it be by the universe or and by other people or by God or whatever it is, you're loved and you matter, and you have to have self-worth, and you have to know that because you matter and because you're here, you have to be taking care of yourself, you know? You have to be. You have to be reading and growing and being good to yourself and being kind to yourself and being gentle with yourself. And if you can be all those things with yourself, then you can be all those things with other people and therefore help others be better.
I think that's perfectly summed up. Yeah. It really is.
I don't know. You know, it's just, I think we're all doing, I think, you know, we're just here and we're trying to do the best that we can. And sometimes we don't know what that is or how that looks. And we can read and we can listen to podcasts like this and we can take bits and pieces of experiences and put that all together and mix it all up and then figure out what works for us. Because our best is different. My best is not your best. And your best is not your next podcast, you know, interviewee's best. Our best is different. It's different for everybody. Better is different for everybody. And I don't think that anybody should ever feel ashamed or, you know, feel that they don't matter. And I think that's so important because, like we said in the very beginning, everybody's story matters. Everybody, we all matter. We're here. We're here for something. So that's what I believe.
I think my last question to you, and hopefully we've covered all of this and, you know, I haven't left you feeling like there's something you didn't say, but do you feel like you've told your story well today on this episode, or is there something that you, you know, want to talk about that we've completely missed?
Okay. So I will say something that we haven't talked about. I'm a really bad liar, right? So you asked me, do I feel I told my story well? The answer is no,
okay.
Because I never feel that I tell my story well. I feel like I'm a much better writer than I am speaker. And so every single time I do a podcast or an interview or I talk in front of people, I get really nervous and I sweat a lot. So we're on the phone and I'm pacing back and forth and I'm sweating the whole time, right? Because I don't know why. This is how I get. I never feel like I convey a good message on a podcast or as a speaker. I hope that I do.
I wholeheartedly disagree.
Oh, well, thank you. But I can't lie. So I'm a really bad liar. I'm a really bad liar. So I had to tell you the truth because even on the phone, I can't lie because it would not be genuine at all.
I love it. I appreciate it. No, and just from my end, I think that you are very eloquent and very well-spoken and like very self-aware. And I always appreciate self-awareness. And I think that you've given some amazing advice. And I think a lot of people are going to take a lot from this. So I hope that you feel my sincerity, at least in that.
I do. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, I'm thankful to you for being on. And it really means a lot to me when people want to be on. And I'm still like amazed and shocked every day that people want to be on this little like podcast that I started a few months ago or November, I guess. I mean, we're not even at a year yet. And I've had so many people reach out and ask to be on and schedule ahead of time. It's just been crazy. And I'm so thankful to you for wanting to be on.
Oh, thank you. And I'm so grateful that you had me on. I love doing these, even though I'm walking and pacing and sweating. I still love doing them.
I've really had to teach myself not to pace when I'm on a podcast. So I've got like a desk that I have a microphone attached to. So I'm not like walking around the room because I do that on the phone. I just pace and pace and pace. It drives my wife nuts.
Yeah, I'm in my gym actually now. I'm in my gym and I'm pacing, so nobody can see me, nobody can bother me. I'm like pacing
That's
back
perfect.
And forth, you know, sweating.
Well, thank you again. I really appreciate you being on. And before we go, I would love for you to tell people where they can find your book, what you have coming up, where they can reach out to you, obviously on beabetteryoufitness.com, but is there anywhere else that people can contact you if they want to? Or and you're based in Long Island, you said? Is that where your gym is also?
Yes, I'm on Long Island. I'm on the East End, South Shore, and I have my own studio. which I love. It's comfortable and it makes me happy and it makes my clients happy. So I love that. And anybody can contact me anytime at Be A Better You Fit. And that's on all the social media outlets. So Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter is Be A Better You Fit. And my book is on Amazon, so that's easy enough. It's called Baby Steps, and it's by me, Maria Fowler. And the only really incredible thing that I have coming up, you know, aside from what I normally do, is we're having a wellness weekend in October on Long Island. It's at Danford's, and it's in Port Jeff, right on the marina. And it's I have such an amazing lineup that it's gonna blow people away. People are gonna be inspired. They're gonna be motivated. They're gonna be empowered. People are gonna have breakthroughs. It's going to be so good. But I only have, I think, 5 slots available. So if anybody wants to come, just contact me. And if I have anything left, I'll be happy to, you know, reserve your spot.
Well, thank you again for being on. Like, I appreciate it. And I wouldn't be opposed to doing it again sometime.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Anytime you want to do it, we'll make an appointment and we'll get it done.
And that concludes another episode of Far Betterment. Thank you to all my listeners. Thank you to all my subscribers. And thank you to everybody who's rated the podcast so far. If you haven't subscribed, you can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, Apple, anywhere that you listen to podcasts, including where you're listening to podcasts right now. And please, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating. It helps us tremendously. I can't tell you how much it helps us. If you want to give us anything less than 5 stars, please don't. There's really no reason.